This is the Overdue Homework Podcast.
Welcome to the show. That's Trav. I'm Drew.
And I'm Trav.
This is the Overdue Homework Podcast. And as always, we are here to give you our opinions about 80s and 90s media. Please contact us at podcast@overduehomework.com. Trav, how are you doing?
Doing really good, Drew. Yeah? Really good. I'm enjoying these days off more and more as every week goes by because I hate my job.
I heard that.
Seriously, getting to me, but this is the most fun part of the week.
Absolutely.
To crank out some blood sport.
Absolutely. I find myself yearning for the podcast. Some people say they work for the weekend. I work for Wednesday evenings.
Working for Wednesdays.
Wednesday evenings. That's why I work. Trav, I'm doing pretty good myself. Cameron's birthday today. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Cam.
It wouldn't have been Cameron's birthday on our last recording, but today.
Today it is Cameron's birthday.
I'm part Dukes. He has been a very, very shitty child lately.
Ooh.
Not like as in a bad little boy, but as in he's had diarrhea for like the better part of a week. So not great, but
you
that's okay.
Shitty little one-year-old.
Damn it, kid. It's really easy to forget yourself when you're dealing with your fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh diarrhea blowout to be like a little angry about it, but then you just look at his little face.
Right.
And you're like, you're dealing with this worse than I am.
Right.
I'm sorry you feel like this, buddy.
Seriously. Can you imagine just you being in that predicament?
No.
You can't even wipe yourself.
You can't even wipe yourself. Worse, you try to put your hands in it because you're really curious about what's going on down there. You just want to wiggle them around and all that poopy.
Oh,
so then at that point, it's just straight to the bathtub.
Straight to the tub.
Anyways, Trav. So we used some articles in production of this podcast. One was from mentalfloss.com, and that was by Sean Hutchinson. Another one was from screenrant.com, and that was by Derek Draven. Both of those names have made appearances on our podcast before, so unwittingly to them, they've been frequent contributors to our podcast. So thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. I credit you guys every time, so please don't be mad. And of course, our homework review for this week is Bloodsport from 1988. Directed by Newt Arnold, screenplay by Christopher Crosby, Mel Friedman, and Sheldon Lettish.
Lettish.
Or Lettish. Or Lettish. Story by Sheldon Lettish. Lettish. Sheldon Lettish. Starring Jean-Claude Van Damme as Frank Dukes. I don't like that his name is Frank Dukes. I wish it was Dew, but it's Dukes.
It's Dukes.
So deal with it. Based on the life of Frank Dukes. He was heavily involved with the movie and at one point claimed to have written it as well, but that was not the truth. So he got a little smackdown on that. It's like, he didn't write this. Come on, man.
No, no.
He was also the fight consultant for all the fights, and he was the self-appointed costume designer. Way to go, Frank.
Way to go, Frank.
He used his own money to pay for the outfits the fighters wore. Because in his words, the original costumes were all wrong. And of course, he knew this because of his experience in the Kumite. We're going to get to a lot more of Frank at the end of this podcast.
Yes, we are.
This movie is also starring Donald Gibb as Ray Jackson, and he's not related to any of the Gibb brothers from the Bee Gees. So just so you know.
Just so you're aware.
Different Gibb. Leah Eris. What a great name. Leah Eris. As Janice Kent and... The only people that say her name in this movie are us.
Yeah. Seriously.
Norman Burton as CID Agent Helmer and Forrest Whitaker as CID Agent Rollins. Don't forget about Bolo Young as Chong Li. Bolo Young, if you love 90s martial arts movies, you are familiar with Bolo Young.
Yeah, for sure.
He is the Chinese Hercules. Ken Su as Victor Lin. Roy Chow as Senso Tanaka. Philip Chan as Captain Chen. Chan is Chen. Chen is Chan. Chan is Chen.
Chen, Chen, Chan.
They should have just said that he was Chan. Why? Just one letter. It should have just been Chan.
Come on.
All right. Release date was February 26th, 1988. And should we go through a few other notable movies from 1988?
Let's do it.
All right. Number one, Rain Man. Have you seen it?
No.
I have seen it like once on TV. Wapner's on, whatever. It's supposed to be a really, really great performance, so I should watch it more than once and on TV.
Maybe.
What's his name that plays the man with Asperger's? Dustin Hoffman. It's a Dustin Hoffman and Tom Cruise movie, so I mean, I could see that, maybe. It seems serious for our podcast.
Yeah, maybe.
We did do The Shining.
We did.
We did The Shining.
And so, I mean, love me some Tom Cruise.
Love me some Tom Cruise. So, number two, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? You've seen it?
Yes.
Love me some Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Love me some Christopher Lloyd. Love me all of that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember it being a really, really big deal because it was like a Disney-Warner Brothers crossover.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my dad being like, this is amazing. This is unheard of. Coming to America, The Royal Penis is Clean, Sir.
Awesome movie.
A very great movie. Crocodile Dundee 2. I once saw Crocodile Dundee 2 at a drive-in theater. It was a double feature with Short Circuit 2.
Nice.
So have you ever seen any of the Crocodile Dundee movies?
I don't think so.
I think they would fit our podcast pretty well.
Yeah.
How about the Short Circuit movies?
Nope.
I think they would fit our podcast also very well. Twins, that is a great movie and will be on our podcast.
We definitely have to do that.
Arnold, DeVito, what can go wrong?
Seriously, the Oscars this year. I don't know if you saw them joking around with Michael Keaton about
Batman. Oh, yes,
oh,
I did.
That was great. Hearing them calling son of a bitch. Show your face around here. That was so funny.
You know, that's technically Arnold, the movie that Arnold made the most money off of all his movies
is Batman and Robin.
No, is Twins.
Oh, Twins.
Is Twins.
Okay. I was like, no way.
Nobody wanted to make the movie, so to get the movie made, basically they used their own money and took percentages of the profit.
Nice.
And that's the most money he ever made off of a movie.
Nice.
Pretty neat. Rambo 3, have you seen it?
No.
I'm sure I have. I don't recall it, but it's Rambo, so I mean, let's get to it.
Yeah.
Rambo 3, Part 2, First Blood. A Fish Called Wanda would be a great comedy to get to. I would love to do that one on this podcast, I think. Another one that I've seen a few times, most of the time when it was on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Cocktail, that's another Cruise film. Slinging drinks.
You said we'll probably get to that before Rain Man.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
And Big. That's
love Big.
Yeah, Big would be a fun one to do as like a special episode. It would be like a good summer episode.
Yeah.
It would be a good like middle of the summer, fun, like big movie, middle of the summer episode. Big movie. Yep, that's creative.
Big
that's
movie.
Creative, Drew. And Die Hard, that would be another great movie. Whether you think it is a Christmas movie or not a Christmas movie, it would be a good Christmas time movie for us to do.
We need a movie for Christmas this
I think
year.
We just scheduled it, Trav.
I think we just scheduled it.
Christmas 2025, Die Hard.
No. 2024.
Oh, yeah. 2024. Die harder.
Die harder.
Okay. So the budget for Bloodsport was 1.5 to 2.3 million.
One of them, you know, question mark things.
Could it have been 1.8 million?
It could have been 1.8 million.
Could it have been 2.1 million?
Yeah, we don't know how much was spent on the actual budget
and
on the amount of cocaine that Jean-Claude Van Damme used in this movie.
That's the discrepancy,
right? That's the discrepancy.
The cocaine receipts got away from them.
Away from them.
Who is not keeping track of the cocaine expenses?
Sorry, I was on cocaine.
Oh, okay, I get it.
Okay, makes sense.
Box office was $50 million. That's $129.7 million in 2023. Interestingly enough, JCVD re-edited this movie himself so they could get it released.
That's crazy.
The movie was shelved for 2 years after filming was completed because Golan didn't like it. The first cut of the film was, in his words, really bad.
Yeah.
Golan told him, I'm not going to release it in theaters. This movie's terrible. I'm putting it straight to video. So Golan let in-house editor Michael J. Duthie edit the movie around the fights, which were then edited by Jean-Claude Van Damme himself.
Boom.
Thanks, JCVD. Wouldn't have this modern martial arts classic.
Yeah, without him.
Without him. Are we ready to break it down, Trav?
I think we are ready.
Let's do it.
Yeah, a couple things right away. All-time favorite movie before even doing this. For sure, one of the most rented movies of my childhood. And even though I know this already because it's part Dukes, because we had a little mishap, I thought how badass of a video game this movie would make, and you have an awesome fact to drop for us later in the podcast when
Hells
it comes to that.
Yeah.
Can't wait for that for sure. And then, you know, it took about halfway through our first attempt to this for me to apologize for my JCVD impression. I'm just going to get that out of the way right now. I'm sorry, everybody, because it's rough.
What? You didn't practice it?
I've been trying, and it does not work. Somehow it always comes out a little Arnold.
That's okay.
I can't help it.
That's okay.
Maybe because we do so much Arnold.
We do a lot of Arnold, and to your credit, he is a little Arnoldy.
He is a little Arnoldy.
They're kind of from the same area of Europe.
Yeah, he's, I don't know, he's got the whisper.
He does have the whisper.
So I've been trying, but.
A little more French sounding.
A little more French.
Yeah, so just go.
A little delicate compared to
Pepe Le Pew on the bit a little bit. All right, so our movie, it opens up in Hong Kong. The Kumite being prepared. And the dude's training. Chong Li, breaking ice.
Yeah.
That's pretty badass.
That's pretty sick.
Do you think he actually broke that ice?
I'm guessing. It's for sure the most badass of that little montage there.
Yeah.
You know.
The dude flying his knee through those boards, the boards looked really fake.
Looked really fake.
Acrobatic, yes, but the boards were fake.
And how easy is that compared to elbowing the shit out of an ice block?
Yeah, he's throwing his whole body weight at it. And Chong Li's just like, elbow. Coconut breaking, ha-cha!
I mean, that
ha-cha.
One's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Necessary, not so much.
Useful.
Useful, but... I don't know. I think more like working on a moving target sitch with them coconuts would have been sweeter. But
probably. You know, they could have been swinging.
He's monkey attacking those things.
He is monkey attacking those things. We got some dudes sparring and then a wild jungle fight.
Yeah.
Wild jungle fight.
That fight definitely reminds me of a little Mortal Kombat movie.
Yeah, definitely.
Fighting in the sand.
Definitely. And a white dude hitting a heavy bag.
That's the best part is everyone showing off their like fighting style or where they come from. Then he's just fucking... just pounding this bag.
Yeah.
Like, I have no discernible talents whatsoever. I just brute force Harley Davidson fan.
I'm just really large.
Just really large.
And then
I like beer.
He does love his beer, doesn't
he? He does love his beer.
And then what was with the dude that walks up to him? He's got kind of a weird voice. Hey, Jackson, you headed to Hong Kong? He's kind of got a weird voice.
Oh, if anything with full contact, I could use a few more scars on my face.
But I heard you can get killed in that Kumite.
Only if you fuck up. Koosh, koosh, koosh. Okay.
I mean, he's got a point.
He's got a point, you know. But how in the hell does this guy even hear about such a thing?
Agreed.
He
seems like a wiener with his, he's
totally
in a tracksuit with his, just, it unzipped. He's not, athletic at all
at
looking.
All?
He's just,
no.
Maybe he's the owner of the gym.
Maybe he
but
is
still,
the owner of that gym.
He's just cruising for friends.
Cruising for a bruising.
We also find out that Chong Li is headed to the Kumite tomorrow. He's pumped. It's tomorrow. He's ready to go.
Oh, yeah.
And we get a final pullback shot on the ring completed and everything set for the Kumite. And that janitor guy, he looks pretty proud of himself.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, I swept this whole thing, guys.
I swept this whole thing with my broom.
I hope some guys die on it tomorrow. Finally, we meet Frank Dukes.
Dukes.
Dude can kick.
Dude can kick.
That's like a punching bag, you know, like a speed bag for punching, but he's just roundhouse in that thing.
Yeah.
Just one after another. He finds out the colonel wants to see him right away, and he wants to know, what's the problem?
Yeah, what's the problem?
The colonel found out that he's going to Hong Kong, and he wants to talk to you about it.
Tell him I'll be right there after I take a shower.
Great job. But it's a shower fake out and Dukes is gone.
Gone.
What's taking so long, Captain?
Shit. Easiest trick in the book.
Easiest trick
in
the book.
Come on.
Like, where was the other exit to that shower?
Obviously. Why isn't he just manning the exit instead
exactly.
of standing X feet away from the shower?
Who knows? Frank, he escaped. That's all that really matters.
So the movie can happen.
Well put. So there are some conflicting stories about how JCVD actually got the part in Bloodsport. Number one is that Van Damme had moved to Los Angeles from Belgium in the early 80s, and he was holding a lot of short-term jobs at the time, like one was driving a limo, another one was delivering pizzas, and another one was working at a carpet factory.
Hopefully he was delivering the pizzas in the limo.
I hope so. And do you think he would, roundhouse kick the pizzas, to your door?
Oh, hell yeah.
Or, do the leg stick out and hold it with the pizza on the end, right?
Yeah.
Here's your pizza.
No tip.
No tip.
Roundhouse. Boom. Oh, man. I really hope that happened. If anyone knows what happened when it came to that, please email us.
Or do you think he just fulfilled, every housewife's fantasy and just laid a whole bunch of chicks? probably laid a whole bunch of chicks being probably. A sausage pizza for you. Maybe. Who knows?
Maybe. I don't know.
So apparently Van Damme ran across Cannon Films' head, Mannheim Golem, Mannheim Golan, outside a restaurant and literally showed off his moves by doing his signature high kicks in front of Golan's face.
That's so badass.
Just, hey, I know that guy. Kick, 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 kick. And Golan reportedly hired Van Damme on the spot for Bloodsport. Kid, I got a flick for you. It's Bloodsport.
Which is beyond badass.
Very much so.
Can you imagine being on the other end of JCVD coming up and just fucking high kicking the shit out of you?
How's $25,000 sound, kid? I'm going to make you a star.
You're hired.
The second one is that in a 1987 interview promoting Bloodsport, Van Damme said that he got the gig by calling Cannon Films and saying that he was a personal friend of Golan and that he had a meeting with him. So with his foot in the door and the execs interested in what Van Damme had to say, Van Damme said that he did his splits, he showed his muscles, and then Van Damme said, I'm the best, and I'm not too expensive right now. And they said, you're hired.
Boom.
I don't know which one to believe. I believe the one that comes straight from JCVD's mouth.
Probably, yeah.
But
the other one sounds a little more badass.
Yeah, so. maybe he was coked out and doesn't remember the other one. Yeah, Who knows? Allegedly. I'm not Jean-Claude Van Damme. Please don't sue me. Yeah. So with Dukes on the lam, the Colonel sends Helmer and Rollins to go bring him back. But first, Frank goes to see his Shadushi, and he's on his deathbed, and we get the backstory to Frank. Great.
Yeah.
Bloodsport holds the record for the longest flashback sequence in history.
It's beyond crazy.
It's just shy of 11 minutes, making it the single longest flashback to date.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, show me a flashback that's longer. I want emails telling me what's a longer flashback. This flashback is so long, you forget that it's a flashback. Especially when he grows up. And if you don't notice that his hair changed, that sweet, sweet pompadour that he has in it, and then all of a sudden he's coming out of the flashback again, you're like, what?
Yeah. Boop, boop,
boop, boop. It was like kind of like a flashback within a flashback.
Right.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. But it's very interesting.
The kid is rough, though.
Yes, the kid is rough.
The kid is rough.
He went to awkwardly break into someone's house and steal a katana. Yeah. I mean, they're badass, right?
Well, obviously.
He gets a giant kick in the stomach from Tanaka's son, Shingo.
Shingo, that is enough.
You must earn the katana. You can't steal it. And then hat slice.
Which is very, very weird.
Very weird.
When he did it, it made me realize that he's wearing a San Francisco Giants hat while he's wearing a New York Giants football shirt.
Hey, I just like Giants, man.
I just like Giants, yo.
I'm a big Giants fan.
They're not the same team. He's just, you know, fair weather fan. It's cool. Oh, crap.
Oh, man. I am a nerd. That's okay, buddy.
That's why you cut my hat.
My hat!
He's a Giants fan.
But New York Giants fan. Yeah. But actually, it was a test.
Yeah, it was a test, which he passed.
He passed. He didn't flinch. He's got the fighting spirit.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah, sure. So Tanaka rounds up JCVD's Frank Duke's family, and they make a deal, which ends up just him getting trained by the guy he tried to rob.
Yeah.
That deal he makes with Frank's parents. He's going to train him in the martial sciences, which I don't think I've ever heard anybody refer to martial arts as martial sciences besides this movie.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a thing. I'm not familiar with it. He's going to train the mind, the body, and the spirit to work together. He's going to whip this young delinquent into shape for you. No charge. He just has to train my kid.
Yep. Which essentially means he's just going to be the punching bag for his kid.
Yeah, and obviously Frank becomes resentful at this.
Obviously.
I don't want to get my ass kicked every day, dude. Train me too.
Yeah, for real.
No. You were going to get your ass kicked every day you tried to steal my sword.
Every day I go home, my parents ask me what happened, I say I got my ass kicked.
Every day!
Every day!
But despite all of this, Frank still sticks up for Shingo at school when he's getting bullied, so Frank's a good guy.
Frank is a good guy.
As portrayed in the movie.
I find it weird that the kid gets his butt kicked, he helps him out, and then his first reaction is, I'm going to get strong enough to fight at the Kumite one day and make my father proud. Was that seriously the dad's like goal this
whole
time?
Seems like it.
Was to train him for this, you could be killed, tournament.
It seems like
since
it.
Since childhood.
Right. It really seems like it.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
But bad news for Shingo. He dies as a young adult.
Yeah.
Sorry, Shingo. What Sorry, do you think Shingo. It was? Car accident?
Car accident or, you know, cancer is a pretty safe bet.
Safe bet? Do you think he was maybe vacuuming and knocked over the katana and accidentally fell on it?
I mean, that would be... That would be intense. I mean, that would make more sense why he's not talking about it.
Oh, man, my own sword killed him.
Yeah, I'm done training. It's all over.
But seriously, it probably was cancer, and that's really sad.
Probably.
It's really sad. Who knows, though? We never really find out. But that means the ending of all the training for Frank, because his Shidoshi's son died. Shingo died.
Yep.
And Tanaka is basically ruined by his son's death. We find out that he survived Hiroshima, which is just brutal, unbelievably brutal.
Yeah.
He lost his first family there because, like, everybody died there.
Right.
He came to America to start over, which I would want to as well.
Yeah.
He left Japan because war was wrong. Great take.
Great take. But he's training his son to be in a... killing tournament. I mean, fight.
Well, that's the other reason he came over to America was to pass his training on to his son.
Yeah. I, you know.
Father to son.
Father and it's to son.
Stopped when Shingo died. But Frank wants to be taught too.
Teach me. I can do it.
You are not Japanese. You are not Tanaka.
You told me I can use whatever technique that works, never to limit myself to one style, to keep an open mind.
Why?
To honor you. Shidoshi.
So now the training is going to start. Tanaka, his Shidoshi, was like, okay, let's do it then.
Let's
I'm gonna kick your ass every day.
Yeah. I'm fucking pissed and I need someone to take it out on.
He's literally throwing Frank all over that mat.
Like, throwing him all over.
Hitting him with sticks.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
I mean, if he's learned one thing, I guess, was how to be a punching bag.
Yeah, he can take a punch.
He can certainly take a punch, a flip here and there.
Taught him the meditation that we see throughout the rest of the movie.
Yeah. Yep.
Catching fish with bare hand because stereotypes.
Obviously.
I mean, and to fight. Obviously. And to fight blindfolded because foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out that Frank can do the splits.
Yes.
Splits count number one.
Splits count one.
Drew, add a ding. Next, the blindfolded brunch.
Oh, yeah.
I want to go to a blindfolded brunch one time and see what happens. See what happens. Frank passes the test and blocks his Shidoshi's chop while blindfolded. It was funny, if you watch Mrs. Shidoshi, Mrs. Tanaka,
yeah.
She's like watching him with like a half smile, like, oh, when's he going to hit him? When's he going to hit him? Oh, is he going to chop him in the face? Oh, he stopped it. Good for him. He passed.
Yeah, I've seen this before.
Ooh, he's going to hit him in the face.
Like did it to his son, yeah. Like almost all the time.
All the time.
Once a week.
And she really enjoyed it every time. But the final test is the splits torture machine.
Yikes.
Yikes.
Yeah, this movie, for whatever reason, made me attempt to do the splits a lot when I was a child, but never because of this scene.
No.
This scene is excruciating.
No.
But this is probably the most fast-forward-worthy scene since Artax dying.
Definitely.
Yeah.
No, definitely. It's very hard to watch.
Seriously.
Fun fact, I was in Taekwondo from ages like 9, 10 to about 12 or 13, somewhere in that area.
Nice.
And I was able to do the splits.
Nice.
It was just one of those things where you spend a half an hour stretching three times a week. You're going to be able to do the splits as a 10-year-old.
Yeah, yeah.
Lost it very quickly after I quit Taekwondo.
For
I'm like,
sure.
That's kid stuff, man.
That's kid stuff. When am I going to need to do the splits?
Interestingly enough, and now I can't do anything near that. Anyways, Frank goes all zen on the bit while he's all strung up in that torture machine, and he busts it. So he passes the final challenge.
Yeah.
Splits count two.
Splits count two.
I mean, he really did fucking do that, though. It really looked like he did it. Didn't
right.
look like there was anything supporting him from behind.
For sure. It doesn't look for how good he can do the splits,
yes,
that doesn't look as excruciating as he makes it seem.
No.
Because he's not actually doing, like, full-on splits.
No.
Later, you know, he's chair to chair
doing
splits.
Beyond the splits in
right,
that scene.
Right.
Like, that's intense.
But obviously he sells the shit out of this.
He does. Ouch.
Some,
he sells it, and it looks painful, and that was painful to watch.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Why does he have this machine? Seriously, like, he did that to his son, too.
I guess.
Like, ouch. from father to son.
Better yet, Frank built that machine in the backyard himself, strung himself all up out there, and then, like, Tanaka is just, like, in the house, like, making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and, like, sees him out, like, the back window. It's like, what the fuck is this guy doing?
Yeah. And then he goes and finishes the job and ties it up around that hook on the log.
He's like, okay, well, I want to see where this is going to go.
All right, yeah, I'll help you out.
I'm into this. Who knows? Frank finally gets his katana. It's a really big deal. The lens of the camera looks like it has Vaseline all over it because it's all, like, dreamy and foggy and serious, you know. And it is a pretty serious deal. They do, like, a handshake with the katana. It's pretty cool. I like it. It looks really, like, official, and, like, it gives you some emotion in the movie. Like, this is them really getting that father-son bond.
Right.
If it wasn't built, I mean, it was built throughout the training that Frank received as a young adult. It really gets fortified in that scene. And, like, you really know that Frank is doing this for his Shidoshi now.
Right, right.
And his Shidoshi has trained Frank to completion. That's pretty cool. I really like that part of the movie. And bang, we're back to the real world, and we get a short dying conversation with Tanaka. He's like, I'm gonna die. Frank wants to go fight in the Kumite to honor him. And when Frank fights, his Shidoshi's spirit fights with Frank. So that's great news.
Oh, yeah.
He's gonna need it, every bit of it.
He's gonna need it.
So it's interesting how that one opens up, and Frank's like, are you awake? And Tanaka has his eyes open and is looking at him. And he's just like, no, of course I'm awake. I'm looking at you.
Come on.
Just a weird little bit that they put into the movie. I don't know why you had to have a quick little joke there.
Right.
It's not, like, laugh-inducing.
No.
Who knows? Finally, we get to go to Hong Kong. Frank and Jackson, they cross paths on a trolley. A lovely little trolley.
Yeah.
Jackson is fulfilling all the stereotypical American things, hitting on abroad. You know, he's just doing his thing, making Europeans hate Americans even more than they already do. Then we are at the hotel where all the fighters are staying for the Kumite. So much for a secret. They're all at the same hotel.
Seriously.
Janice Kent, a reporter. She doesn't really, like, state it so much in that moment, but she's a reporter trying to figure out what the Kumite is and how you get invited for a story. What an interesting story.
What an interesting story.
Does she work in Hong Kong, live in Hong Kong, work for a Hong Kong paper, or is she there, like, from America researching this?
She seems to live there.
She does, doesn't she?
Later he's at, I'm guessing, her apartment. That doesn't seem like a hotel room.
It's either her apartment or the hotel room, one of the two. That's one of the two.
So, yeah, maybe an American and they're paying for her stay? Or
it could be.
I don't know.
She could be a reporter abroad, just living and working in Hong Kong, working for NBC out of New York or something. Yeah. She's probably working for some, like, Black Belt magazine.
Yeah. Get us that Kumite scoop.
I need that Kumite scoop by Friday. They barely, like I said, they barely mention her name in the whole movie, which is unfortunate. It's weird. I mean, she's a person. She's a lady. She's got a name. Let's use it.
Seriously.
So she's not really getting very far with the two men that she's trying to question. She's like, what is the Kumite? And they get up and leave. I'm not going to talk about that.
Yeah.
So no answers from them. Frank and Jackson find each other and they face off in a video game. Great video game.
Yeah. It looks pretty cool.
What, you think you can give me some competition?
Sure, I'll try.
Frank kicks some serious ass in the Kumite.
Oh yeah.
In the video game. Did you notice that Jackson says, as he's putting in the coin, he goes, red.
No,
he says red to signify that he's the red one on screen.
Oh,
the last time I watched it, I was like, why did he say red? Oh, he's the red one. I would have figured that out by their orientation in the picture, right? On the screen.
You're on one side, he's on the other.
He puts the coin in, stands up, and goes, red.
Red.
Okay.
Alrighty. And he also, Frank was going to pay, and then Ray's like, no, I don't want to take your money.
That game looks like it kind of sucked. It looked cool, but it also looked like it kind of sucked, like dual joysticks.
I
don't know. It's called Karate Champ from 1984. It was released in arcade and on some like Commodore 64 and some stuff like that. So you can actually find it and you can play it on your iPhone. I know it's on the iPhone store. I don't have an iPhone, but the internet told me it's in the iPhone store.
Nice.
So go check it out if you have an Android. I suppose I could have done the same thing.
You mean if you have an iPhone.
If you have an iPhone. That's right. So at this point, Ray and Frank, they have formally met now and are already becoming best of friends.
Obviously, because they're both from America.
Yeah, they both represent the Americas.
The Americas. The North American fighters.
The North American fighters. So back in the USA, Helmer and Rollins pay a visit to Frank's Chidoshi. But he's too sick.
Was Frank here?
Yes, 2 days ago.
Was he going to Hong Kong?
I don't know. And then Helmer and Rollins leave.
Yeah. All
right. What was really the point of this scene?
I can find no point to that scene.
To give them some direction in the movie?
Yeah,
like,
pretty much to put them on his trail, but they even though they're already on it.
They already know he's going to Hong Kong to fight in the Kumite.
Yeah.
And it was funny, too, how Rollins was like going to question her more.
Right.
And then Helmer steps in and is like, thank you very much, ma'am. Have a wonderful day. And he's like, come on, dude.
Come on, dude. And he's like, you're done here, all right?
You're done here.
Yeah, this is very weird. Were you in any way hoping she was going to be like, oh, yeah, he was here. My husband talked him out of it. Okay, perfect. So he's back at his house. All right, cool.
Great news.
Good news. I'll go check him out while he's on furlough then here in the Americas instead.
In the Americas instead. Back in Hong Kong, Frank and Ray are checking into the hotel and they need to go meet Mr. Lin in room 310. But he's in the lobby.
He's in the lobby.
So there must have been a scene where they went up to 310 and they're like, ah, screw it. Cut that one out. Just have him in the lobby, dude.
Yeah. Let's put him in the lobby.
Just put him in the lobby. Are you Frank Jackson? You look like a Jackson. You must be Frank Dux.
No, it's Dukes.
How does he look like a Jackson? Does he look like Tito? Does he look like Jermaine?
Yeah. I don't think either of them look like a Jackson or a Dukes. That makes no sense.
Jackson, maybe. He's just fond of American presidents. He's like, you look like Andrew Jackson.
You look like Andrew Jackson. You're from the West.
Like, put up your Dukes, right?
Put up your Dukes, right?
No. It's Dukes. Yes, that's very funny. Dukes. Boy. Lin is there to make sure Frank and Ray don't get into any trouble and fight outside the ring and get disqualified. And that's his only job. That's what he's there for, to make sure that they're on time, and he's not very good at it.
No, he's not.
Frank is always late.
Frank is always late.
He leads them through the many shady alleyways to make it to the ring. It looks kind of scary.
Oh, yeah.
It looks kind of scary. What was with the dude that they meet before they go back to the ring? No. Okay, USA.
Okay, USA. Okay. Right. Okay.
You can get a shirt of that dude if you want.
Yeah.
Get that shirt. Go get that shirt. At the Kumite, a very unassuming place. From the outside, you'd never know it was there. It's not like there were two giant red doors with armed guards.
No.
You'd never know it was there.
No.
It's a secret full contact martial arts tournament. Oh boy. Inside, full of fighters, all are sparring and posturing. We see some gamblers. We're going to see that gambler guy, that bookie guy, a couple more times in the movie, and a couple of hot babes on either side of him. They all need to show the Black Dragon boys their invitations. Then they need to qualify. Then they need to not get killed. Thanks, Mr. Lin. The Black Dragon boys are skeptical of Frank. He doesn't look like a Tanaka. So Frank has to prove it by breaking a brick using the death touch. The Kanmak, right?
Yep.
The Kanmak.
Kanmak.
Choose a brick. But the top one on a pile of 12.
No, bottom one.
Frank defies the laws of physics and breaks it. Son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch.
We honor your invitation. And then everyone claps. Yay.
Damn right you honor it.
Chong Li was watching because of course.
Of course.
Very good trick, but brick don't hit back. And then we get our first Chong Li death stare. What sound effect should I put there? Like a wah wah, like a grrr, something like that.
Something ominous.
Maybe it'll be no sound effect. I don't know. I've already established that I'm going to do some dings.
Yeah. So,
it'll be some sort of sound effect, I'm sure.
Maybe like a gong, gong.
There you go. I like it. Bong. I like it. That'll be great. Helmer and Rollins contact the local police looking for some help to find Frank, but they're pretty reluctant to help. His men are overworked and probably in the pockets of the local syndicates, so they want to make sure that this tournament happens. Chen ends up like acquiescing a little bit and says, I'll see what can be done, but that's not very reassuring ultimately. No. Seems like I said there might be a little pressure to keep the Kumite open. Back at the hotel, and Janice is getting harassed by one of the fighters competing in the Kumite, one of the early, like, mini-villains. He's like a stage boss. Thank goodness Frank is there to break it up, and thank goodness Mr. Lin is there, too, so Frank doesn't get disqualified for fighting outside the ring.
Leave the girl alone.
She's coming to my room.
If you have to fight over this, we will both be kicked out of the Kumite.
So let's gamble on the girl's life, or better yet, whether or not she's going to get raped and kidnapped and sold into slavery.
Yeah.
Frank has got a coin, and he says if he can snatch it out of the dude's hand. Frank has a coin, and he says if he can snatch it out of that douchebag's hand, the girl gets to go with him.
Yep.
And if not, she can go with the douchebag.
Yep.
So he's pretty confident in his ability to get that coin, I guess.
He's confident, but this dude... What is it? Sadak Hassan?
Yeah, something like that.
His minion gives the best line of the whole movie. He is American shithead who makes tricks with bricks.
That is a really good line.
Amazing.
Well, not only does Frank grab the coin, but he switches it.
He does switch that shit.
You lose, asshole. Nope, Frank won. So don't count your coins before you've opened your hand. So now Janice and Frank go for a walk. She is a reporter. Why won't anybody talk to me about the Kumite? Because the Kumite is for the fighters, not the public. Duh, come
for
on.
For real.
Frank agrees to talk to Janice about the Kumite under one condition. He gets to take her out to dinner.
Ooh.
Suave. Rico Suave.
Right after he asks her something like, did Sadak tell you anything? And she said, just that I had nice legs. And then what does he do? He reaffirms that. You do have nice legs. So that's kind of the theme with our really old 80s and 90s stuff.
Yes.
The legs.
The legs.
Comments on the legs.
The ladies love the legs. The 80s were the legs. 90s were the boobs.
Yep.
The 2000s are the butts.
Yep.
Something's going on in the
2010s. Something. In 2020.
Yeah, who knows? The whole body?
The whole body.
Flash to Frank in his hotel room, and he's meditating, and he's doing the splits. So splits count number three.
Splits counts number three.
Jackson comes into the room. That hurts me just looking at it. It's time to get ready. The bus leaves in 5 minutes. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
That was kind of Macho Man-ish. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Bonesaw is ready. At the Kumite, and the tournament begins. Thank God, because that's what we're here for.
Oh, yeah.
Established by the Black Dragon, the fighters come together every 5 years to face each other in full contact. They really like harping on that in this movie. Full contact.
Full contact. And
after 3 days, one fighter will prove that they are the best. May the mightiest fighter prevail. Chong Li, Frank, and Ray are all staring at each other intently.
Oh, yeah.
Chong Li does stare too. There are three ways to win.
A KO. Your opponent says, Mate. Or you get knocked out of the ring. Or as Mr. Ling says, you throw the motherfucker right off the runway.
I don't like that it's called a runway. I'm going to say that right now. Yeah. Should be called a ring or a mat or something like that. They're not like high fashion posing down the thing.
doing it to
I'm Too Sexy or something like that.
A ring, a mat, the arena, something.
Not the runway. That's probably the traditional name for it, so that's whatever, but that's what it is. The first fight, Sen Ling versus Swan Paredes. Sen Ling versus Swan Paredes. Paredes. Sen Ling versus Swan Paredes, or Saget versus Ryu kind of fish.
Yeah.
It has a lot of feel to that, to like
a
Mortal Kombat or a Street Fighter.
Sagat.
Swan is the first one to bloody Sen Ling, and that's why they call it Bloodsport, kid. I mean, of course, that's why they call it.
As if like him seeing that or Ray reaffirming that isn't it? Oh, man, I didn't know that's what was going on here. Frank's out of here.
I'm out.
He's out.
You mean
out.
I could get kicked in the face?
Oh, jeez.
And then Swan makes short work of Senling and KO slash hits him off the runway in a minute 30. So pretty fast. The matches go quick in Bloodsport.
Yeah.
Time for Ray Jackson to get his shot. Ray versus a guy in tights. Never did see his name on the board in the back, so guy in tights.
But seriously, Ray's outfit is somehow approved at the Kumite. It's like black Costco sweatpants and then the yellow sash on the side. It's just so weird to me. I don't know what it is.
Underneath that sash is the shoelace, right?
Seriously. Like a paper clip tightening those pants.
I like it.
It's so weird.
Ray makes pretty short work of his opponent with a hammer fist to the face. And
KO.
I'm going to put one hand in the other hand. I'm going to make a big fist with two hands. It's a double fist. Does he double fist him in this one?
I think so.
Or is it just the one fist?
Oh, no. This is just the single smack.
He double fists Chong Li later.
Yes, he does.
I'll come back to that joke later.
I'm going to kill you, man. Yeah, you.
And it's funny how Chong Li looks a little confused. He kind of like half stands up, kind of looks around.
Oh, you do actually mean me? Death stare number three.
Death stare number three. Frank wants to know what took Ray so long. Funny, real funny, Frank. Up next, it's the big one so far. Chong Li versus Budnam Prong. And we all know how this goes.
Yeah.
It would have been funny, though, if Chong Li just lost and it was just a big letdown.
Yeah.
The crowd is chanting Chong Li's name. He's never been defeated. He's got the fastest KO ever. And he even killed a guy in the last tournament.
He stood there and watched the guy die.
Chong Li takes his dude out, no problem whatsoever.
Yeah, little showmanship there, just stops in the middle of it. And the guy's not knocked out, but he just sits there and waits to get knocked out.
That palm strike right to the face.
Ouch.
And then he tosses him off the runway.
Later.
And the crowd continues to chant Chong Li.
Chong Li.
Chong Li. Chong Li. Chong Li. Chong Li. He hops around. It's a new world record, 14.8 seconds.
Yeah.
I love his energy, but his hopping and arm waving is a little weird.
It's a little weird.
It's a little weird.
It's a little weird.
It's okay. It's a little weird. Frank Dukes versus Sadiq Hassan.
Hassan.
It's sweet revenge time on that misogynistic bastard from earlier in the hotel. He tried to take Frank's girl. So now it's personal.
Now it's personal. Now I show you some trick or two.
Sadiq sucks.
He does. He sucks big time.
He basically just hands Frank his arm at the beginning of the fight, and Frank takes him out with a few head chops.
Yeah.
Chop, 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 chop. And then Sadiq fakes a KO after being threatened with another punch.
Yeah, it doesn't even make sense.
No, because you're out of the tournament.
And why does Frank even roll with that?
I don't know.
It's weird that he even tries that.
He should have just punched.
That's a thing?
He should have just punched him anyways.
Yeah.
Or grabbed him and made him say Mate.
You've done that before in a non-Kumite setting, like been so threatening that you just showed I could punch you. Just go to sleep. And he does. But it's an obvious fake out.
Yeah, obviously a ruse. Sadiq gets up and he's going to hit Frank from behind.
Yeah.
Like, come on, Sadiq, you really do suck.
You really do suck.
But Frank is prepared because of blindfolded fighting.
Yeah.
And elbow to the face.
Elbow to the face.
And Frank has a new world record at 12.2 seconds. So all of that took place in 12.2 seconds.
His first fight in the Kumite, he broke the fucking world record.
And Chong Li hits him with death stare number four.
Number four.
Then we see janitor guy steal Sadiq's gold tooth off the mat.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know why this is in the movie.
I don't know either, but for whatever reason, I remember that scene so vividly for some reason. That's like the second time you even see the janitor in the movie.
Right.
And it took me, I don't know why, but it took me till watch number 7, now that I just had recently, to realize he is not checking to see if it fits in an empty spot in his mouth. He is biting it to make sure it's real gold.
Correct.
My God. The whole forever. I thought it was so weird. Like, okay, he's missing a tooth and it fits perfectly. Alrighty then. Today I'm like, okay, it's a money thing.
It's a money thing.
Ah, there you go, Trav. There you go.
There must have been a scene that hit the edit room floor of Sadiq confronting the janitor outside the ring or something like that, right?
Yeah,
to get his tooth back. That's the only reason reason you put something like this in the movie.
Right.
Only reason. They should have just gotten rid of it completely.
Yeah,
just
seriously.
Chop that whole thing out.
Definitely agree.
Chop it all out. So during that fight scene, Van Damme's elbow actually struck the face of actor Bernard Mariano, knocking him out. The footage was left intact, clearly showing the elbow make contact.
That's awesome.
Did you perhaps look for that at all to see?
I didn't.
I didn't either. And I don't know if I believe it.
For some reason,
like...
I was thinking it was the kick when he's fighting the Muay Thai guy later that's like Sagat.
Yes.
So I was watching like, well, that was a... It looked like a pretty clean kick.
It did.
But that wasn't the part.
That wasn't that part. But it did. That I also noticed that one on my last watch through. I'm like, that would look like it may have hurt.
Yeah,
that
for
would look
sure.
like it may have hurt. But it's time for some rapid fire fight scenes, some good old action fighting at its best. I love every minute of it.
Oh, yeah.
Fighting action montage. If it's going to be a montage, that's the kind of montage I want.
Yeah.
Fighting in action. That's what I want.
And then doesn't that song start?
Yes.
Yeah.
My body's ready. My heart's on fire. Gonna push it over the wire. I don't think that was the right tune, but close enough.
Fight to survive.
Fight to survive.
Kumite, kumite, kumite.
That song is a jammer.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, JCVD in real life loved the soundtrack of this movie and like was a huge fan of the band. So. Great.
How couldn't you?
How couldn't you? Favorite montage fighter, Monkey Guy and Thai Kickboxer Guy. Those are my two favorite out of there. And the giant guy that broke that dude's back. That was pretty good.
Is he supposed to look like E. Honda? Because he does.
He does look like E. Honda. You are correct. Like I never thought about that, but he certainly does.
He certainly does.
And of course, Chong Li fighting Frank. Of course, Chong Li and Frank move up the ranks as neither of them lose because they got a fight at the end of the movie. It bears to mention that there were no stunt people used in this movie. The production wanted the Kumite to be as realistic and authentic as possible, so they hired real-life martial artists to fight alongside Van Damme. Paulo Tocha, who plays the Muay Thai fighter Paco, is a real-life Muay Thai champion and one of the first Westerners to train in the martial art in Thailand.
That's awesome.
Michael Kissy, that's the only way. Queasy? There you go. It's got that Q sound in it. Q-I-S-S-I. Michael Queasy?
Queasy?
I don't know why I have such a hard time with that. Who played the kickboxer Swan Parades? Another name I can't say, apparently, was a fellow martial artist and friend of Van Damme who trained with him in Belgium. So Van Damme's probably like, hey, you want some money? Come on over, buddy.
Yeah, that's awesome.
He actually followed Van Damme to Los Angeles and found himself in Bloodsport and eventually played the villain Tong Po in Kickboxer.
Boom.
I don't really see the facial resemblance to me between Tong Po, the image I have in my mind, and that actor is not the same. So I don't know. I'll believe it. I believe it. But
I genuinely don't know if I've seen Kickboxer.
It's the same movie.
That's what I've heard. But it's the same movie.
I sometimes get confused which one Ray Jackson is in.
Yeah.
Because there's like another, like he has a buddy in Kickboxer also.
Is that one also end based on a real story?
I don't remember. I don't think so.
I don't think so.
The next day, Helmer and Rollins are having lunch poorly. It's not going well for them. They should have asked for forks, according to Chen.
But Rollins is Whitaker, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he's very excited about this food, though.
Yes.
But he eats none of it.
None of it.
He's like splashing the chicken in the soy sauce or something bowl. And then they get the news of where Frank Dukes is, and they're out of there.
They're out of there. He tosses some eel to that dog, and the dog doesn't even want it.
Dog ain't eating it.
So Helmer and Rollins leave to go track down Frank. At the hotel, Helmer and Rollins, they find Frank and Ray, and Frank is going to have to go with them.
Not until the Kumite is over. Who the hell are these two scumbags?
Just stay out of it, pal. It's none of your business, okay?
I ain't your pal, dickface.
Don't make it tough on us, Frank.
I'll be in the airport in 2 days.
Don't make us use 50,000 volts on you, Frank. And then those are like the weirdest, oldest looking stun guns in history.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know how they have pockets to put those things in.
In no way threatening to these two American badasses.
So Frank runs, but with a little help from Ray, Ray takes him out. Unless you want to shit sparks, you better just stay put, okay? I guess Ray didn't want to shit sparks because he let them go.
Yeah.
Frank on the run through the streets of Hong Kong. It's a Mentos commercial.
Yeah, it is.
It is a Mentos commercial. Have you seen that online at all? Because it's literally a Mentos commercial.
I don't think I've seen
the Somebody's commercial. Put the music to this like little scene. I mean, there's some edits and stuff in it, but I have the YouTube link. It will be in the show notes.
Nice.
It is very, very worth your watch because it's hilarious. I even had them both on the screen at the same time to watch them to see like where the cuts are because there's some pretty obvious cuts. They make it shorter and stuff.
Right.
But The music goes with it so unbelievably well. It's well worth your watch. It's worth a Google. Overall, though, the scene is kind of like a lackluster chase. They're not really running after him that hard.
No.
Frank's just kind of running in circles, like slapping on buses and stuff. And like.
And as a viewer, you have no worry that he's going to get caught at all, obviously. He's toying with them.
He's circling
around, hanging out at the tree, waving at them, and then letting them catch up and then run away. It's just.
I would honestly expect a little bit more out of an action film.
Yeah.
Like maybe, I don't know, maybe to keep it a PG-13, there couldn't be any gunplay, basically, but there should have been some gunplay.
At least I can pick up a couple trash can lids
there
and
you
fucking
go.
Frisbee them sons of bitches at their faces or chuck it under their feet and have them go sliding. Something cool. Like, come on.
That would have been great. Frank does ultimately get away from Helmer and Rollins, and they end up in the water. And I always think of cell phones when people fall into the water, but it's 1988,
it's
so 88. Don't have to worry about that. So it's time for that date with Janice in his hotel room, her apartment. I think you're right with her apartment.
I think
because
it's her apartment.
The bed looks like a lady's bed.
Yeah.
Not a hotel bed. It looks like a lady bed.
Right. I agree.
I think you're right. Her apartment. Pretty lame. Speaking of lame, their conversation. I mean, honestly,
seriously,
who cares about this?
Nobody.
She wants in. She wants into the Kumite, so nothing has changed with her story.
They have strict rules. No press.
Come on. You never break the rules.
What do you want?
I really want you to get me into the Kumite, but what I really want is to get to know you. After all, we have all night.
Bow, 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 bow.
He scored.
He scored. Hard.
For one, I cannot believe there are no boobs in this movie.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I need to see Janice's tatas.
No.
But this movie was ripe for a strip club show, or a strip club scene, right?
Definitely.
It was.
There's no way Ray Jackson isn't at a strip club.
There would have been a scene where Frank has to go get Ray from a strip club.
Get Ray, because he's drunk. Like,
yes.
For sure that was
for
cut.
For sure. Just some tease in the background. Yes. No, like, maybe there, well, every strip club scene, there's the one, like, up and down, ceiling to floor shot of the one stripper on the pole.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's just tees in the background.
Right.
This tees in the background.
Come on.
Eh, what are you going to do?
Missed opportunity.
Missed opportunity. We do get to see some sweet JCVD booty, though.
Oh, yeah, we do. And that is some serious undergarments
for
JCVD.
It's a mankini, bikini briefs.
Yeah, I mean, they look, you know, I mean, about as comfy as briefs can be, I guess. You know, if they're like satin or
I was gonna say
velvet or something like.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure they're satin.
Yeah, definitely. And we also find out that he sleeps naked after a fresh bone.
After a fresh bone.
A fresh bone, because he's slapping them on. You see a little bare cheek.
You get a little butt cheeks.
Them on. And then he's going to put his pants on. He's like, you know what? I'm comfy enough in these satin briefs. I'm going to get back in the bed.
Getting back in.
Getting back in.
The night went well for them. It's a new romance. But alas, Frank has to go kick some ass.
Yep.
Good luck today. Meet me again for dinner tonight.
Sure.
No, he's not going to meet you for dinner again.
No.
Oh, even after that bang-a-thong, Frank still... Bang-a-thong? No. Nope.
Bang-a-thong.
Even after that bang-a-thong, Frank still refuses to get her into the Kumite. That's okay. She'll get over it.
Yeah.
She's going to get in on her own ways.
Yeah.
Kumite. 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 Frank is late, and Jackson is going to try his hands, well, his head at some brick breaking.
Yeah.
I get it. Comic relief. It is kind of funny. The scene seems weird and awkward when he breaks it over his head. It's cool. I like it. But it's still like, it's just kind of weird. It's just kind of weird. Next, we see Janice. She's there with the bookie guy.
She's there with the bookie guy, and this is weird to me. So he has to leave because he's got to get going.
Yep.
So either A, he's still wearing those satin briefs
under
his outfit when he's there. And she made it there all dolled up in a dress at the same time. Or the only way she plausibly made it there at the same time is he went home to shower, I'm guessing?
Potentially.
That's the only way.
So,
otherwise, how the hell is she there at the same time?
This lends more credence to the fact that they were at her apartment.
Right.
Because that's the only way she'd be able to get there before him.
Right.
That's the only way. And how would she... Like, it's the same distance. So he must have gone back to the hotel to shower. Or he's just freeballing it underneath that gi.
Yeah, he's freeballing it. And she apparently already had this backup plan set up. Like, she wanted to go with Frank. But since it didn't work out, she just...
Hey, bookie guy.
Hey, bookie guy. She banging I need him. To go now.
Is she banging him on the side?
Yeah, she might.
She might be.
She, at least she's been pretending like she's willing.
Yeah, at least that.
Yeah.
It turns out, though, she actually says directly to Frank, it's not the first time that she's had to go undercover to get a story. But you don't normally say, it's not the first time I've had to go undercover while you're undercover.
Yeah, you don't do that. You really don't do that.
Back to the fights. Speaking of fights, the movie is almost single-handedly responsible for the creation of Mortal Kombat, the video game.
Mic drop.
Yeah, so Mortal Kombat was first released in 1992, as a lot of our listeners probably already know. Developers were initially asked to create a game based on Van Damme's movie Universal Soldier, but the deal fell through. Have you seen Universal Soldier?
Yes.
It's a good one.
Yes.
Dolph Lundgren, JCVD, gotta love that. Who else is in that? I feel like there's some other people in that, like some other side characters. You're like, oh yeah, that guy. Yeah, oh yeah, that
I'm
guy.
Thinking of like the next one. Ooh, the has second one. Goldberg in
yes, it,
it
does. Yes, yeah. It does. So developers, like I said, were initially asked to create a game for Universal Soldier, but instead they capitalized on Van Damme's persona by creating the character Johnny Cage. Notice the same initials.
Seriously, how do they never come to this conclusion?
And the fact that Johnny Cage is a conceited Hollywood actor type whose signature move was the splits and whose spandex sash costume is exactly the same as Van Damme's in Bloodsport.
Yeah, he literally has his moves from the movie. It's crazy.
It makes so much sense now that it's spelled
so
out
much
for you.
Sense.
I wonder if I would have been a 20-something in 1992 if I would have been like, dude, that's JCVD.
Yeah.
Dude. Standing at some arcade. Some smoky arcade, probably in 1992.
With some troubled teens.
Troubled teens. Well, we're going to move on to Paco versus Toon. I don't like that name, Toon. I don't get it. Toon? Sure, his name's Toon.
I guess.
I am a fan of Paco, though. I like the way he fights. The Muay Thai fighting style is very badass to me.
Yeah.
Paco takes out Toon with ease, and Janice is into the fighting. She's like, I'm into this. I like it. Kick some ass, people. Kick some ass. Next is Red Gi Frank versus some guy. Red Gi, best costume of the movie.
Best costume.
Best costume of the movie.
Who's his opponent? Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't
Red Gi.
Matter. Red Gi wins Red Gi without wins. Frank in it.
Red Gi wins that
you
gold
combine
sash.
Those two,
oh man,
that fusion.
It's a. He should. What would happen if Frank and Jackson did a fusion ha?
Oh man,
fusion ha.
Well, they would obviously screw it up the first
yeah,
time.
Yeah, first couple
and
of
be
times.
The chubby version.
The chubby version.
You know, but it would be hilarious to see Frank doing some double fist action.
Now, what if you had a man the size of Jackson with the flexibility of Frank Dukes?
That is a fighter I want to see.
Unstoppable.
Unstoppable. Naturally good at video games, loves Harley Davidson. Charismatic, can do the splits.
Can kick a basketball off a rim.
Oh, man. But seriously, that outfit is beyond badass. My cousins were super into Taekwondo growing up, and I went to a few tournaments where people were wearing, I swear, that exact outfit.
I'm sure.
I would assume now, seeing that, why wouldn't you?
Right.
If I was
exactly.
in Taekwondo, that's what I'd be wearing.
I want the red one, please.
I'll take the red one, please.
It is easily the best costume of the movie among anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Frank opens up with lots and lots of kicks. I likey, I likey, I likey.
I likey the kicks.
Frank wins pretty easily. And next, it's Chong Li versus our tall kickboxer guy. That ominous music tells us things are not going to go well for kickboxer guy.
Definitely not.
Shattered that tibia.
Whew.
That bone is sticking out. Yep, that's bone sticking out. Pretty gross.
Yeah, yeah.
Janice is disgusted. So am I, Janice.
So am I, Janice.
I do have to say, it's whoever did the makeup, they spent their whole budget on that makeup effect because I think it looked pretty dang good.
Yeah, it did.
It was very convincing, and I shield my eyes from that scene.
Yeah.
I literally put my hand up and blocked that scene.
Right.
Can't stand it.
No.
I got a little leg break history, so maybe it
That's
hits a little bit to home for me.
Yep.
Mine didn't come out of the skin, though.
Thank God.
Thank the God. Thank the God.
Thank the God.
That's a saying real humans say, right?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Frank is kicking more ass, and Chong Li is kicking ass, too. Lots of ass kicking going on.
Yep.
We get Death Stare number 5. And then some random guys, because other people are there, too.
Yeah.
It is a very well choreographed fight. That dude, when he gets kicked, when he gets knocked out from that kick,
yeah.
he really commits to that fall.
Oh, yeah, he does.
It's one of the few times we get an extended over the ring, over the run, excuse me, runway shot,
yeah.
which is cool and really accentuates that head banging off the mat after he takes that kick to the face.
Yeah.
Looked very convincing to me.
Convincing. You're wondering how he made it that far, honestly, because he's like very short compared to the other people.
But. Speed. Speed and craftiness.
Speed. Got him past day one.
And he wore jean shorts. Maybe he didn't. I don't know. I don't even know what that means or why I said it. Finally, we get another centerpiece fight. It's Frank versus João Gomes. João is an intense guy.
Yeah.
Very intense guy. He's going to cut Frank's head off.
Yeah, he is.
He's going to do it.
He's going to flex on him.
He's going to flex on him and cut his head off. Why doesn't he use his thumb when he does the thing?
Nobody knows.
Isn't that the traditional motion, is the thumb cutting the head off, not the finger?
Not where he's from.
No, that arm was rigid. It was just... See, that's worth the camera right there.
Seriously.
Frank opens with a kick to the face, because that's how he opens every fight.
Obviously.
Kick to the face, except for the one he caught the hand and did some chops, but yeah. kick to the face.
He prefers to start with a kick to the face.
Yeah, he's got the fastest legs in the West. Sure.
Yeah.
And then a somersault kick to end the match by ring out.
Next fight.
Man, João Gomes didn't put up any fight whatsoever.
No. Pathetic.
Whatsoever. So it's Pumala versus Ricardo Mora. Poor Ricardo.
Poor Ricardo.
Love that guy's fighting style. He's all crafty like a monkey, flying all over the mat, over the runway, excuse me. And man, that guy used to love walking, because that back is broke.
It is broke. I need a backyotomy.
And again, Janice is disgusted by what she sees. Janice disgust count two?
Two. Yeah,
no sound effect. No sound effect for that one. Chong Li is up next, and Ken looking dude does not stand one chance.
No, he does not.
No. KO kick and death stare five. Ding, ding, ding. Up next is Frank versus Pumala. Splits count number four.
Oh, yeah.
Extra points for being dragged while in the splits, right?
Yeah,
extra points.
Definitely.
Extra points. At first, Frank's strikes have very, very little effect. He even gets caught in the bear hug. So what's left? My head. I'm going to start hitting you with my head.
I mean, really no other option.
Three solid headbutts. An uppercut headbutt and a left and a right.
Yep.
Uppercut headbutt.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Yeah. He's been training for that.
Yes.
Thank you, Shidoshi.
Thank you, Shidoshi. He taught him that one.
He did.
That was one of the last
one.
Things that he taught yeah. him was the uppercut headbutt.
Yep.
It does turn the table, so that's good for Frank, because he needs the win so he can fight at the end of the movie. Frank fells that giant tree of a man with that smash to the gut. It was the Kanmok to the gut. It was the Kanmok to the gut. And then one of the quintessential peak attacks of the movie.
Oh, yeah. Dick punch.
Straight dick punch.
Dick punch. The literal Johnny Cage move.
The literal Johnny Cage move.
Dick punch.
Splits the dick punch.
Yeah. Ouch.
So technically, that is another splits count. Ding.
Ding.
And then he just pushes Pumala over. Just pew, pew. At this point, Janice is intrigued.
Oh, yeah.
She's doing all her acting with her amazing facial expressions in this
yep.
She thinks Dukes is a righteous dude. It's time for the big one. Jackson versus Chong Li. Well, things didn't go well for Ray.
No, pretty quick.
He should have listened to Frank.
Go for the gut. He's weak in the gut. And stay away from that right leg.
Ray did neither.
No.
Ray didn't either.
He's just beyond stupid.
Yeah. Oh, even after he stuns Chong Li.
Yeah. He stuns him. He's going straight Krillin, and everyone's celebrating. We got the villain down after one hit. Yeah. No. No, you didn't.
Well, even Frank is pissed about it.
Yeah. Seriously. Come on. What are you doing? Keep going.
Chong Li, he tastes his blood, so you know it's all over for Ray at this point.
It's beyond over.
It's over. Ray. If you're tasting your blood, you're about to go apeshit. I love the look on Bolo Young's face, though, when he does taste the blood. He's like, this is disgusting. Multiple kicks to the head and then a skull stomp.
No!
And the most terrifying death stare in history of cinema from Chong Li.
Yeah.
He looks absolutely possessed.
Terrifying.
Like, you hire him for this movie for that face.
Yeah,
for
real.
This scene alone.
Yeah.
This scene alone. To add insult to injury, he takes Ray's Harley bandana.
Son of a bitch.
Kind of swings it around a little bit.
Yeah.
It's hard to look menacing with a piece of cloth, right?
It is. But he squeezes it real tight.
And then snatches it real quick in front of...
If you wear one of these, it's going to be in my hands. Okay.
We do get a mini death stare. So death stare six. Mini death stare. Mini death stare. Frank wants to end it right there, but Mr. Lin stops it. Come on, Frank. You got to fight him at the end of the movie, buddy.
Yeah, yep, yep.
In the hospital. And Ray, he's doing okay. He's got a head like a rock, after all. Frank, we'll get back at Chong Li.
That's a promise.
Janice doesn't want to see Frank get hurt, so now she's very anti-Kumite.
Janice, stay out of this.
That's the time. That's when they say
her. That's the first time you hear her name.
Her name in the whole movie.
Yeah.
Janice.
And the only time, right?
The only time.
Yeah.
Like, even at the end, why isn't he like, Janice?
Janice!
He's like, I gotta get out of this country.
I gotta get out of here. Stage 5 clinger.
Janice and Frank continue their argument outside, and they break up over the Kumite. Dang it.
Dang it.
They were such a wonderful couple.
I was so invested.
Frank is just trying to be the best that he can be. Like, you understand that, right, Janice? You want to be a really good reporter? I want to be a really good fighter. I want to fight dudes. You want to report stuff. You don't get it?
Life isn't all satin undergarments, okay?
Although I really wish it was.
I really wish it was.
So what's Janice's next move? To go to the police and try to stop the Kumite that way. But it's a no-go. We don't really know quite yet, honestly.
Yeah.
Bam. Right into a sad public transport montage.
Yeah, yeah.
Smash cut.
Yeah, smash cut.
Frank reflecting on the movie so far. We get some little cuts of the movie to pad the runtime a little bit.
Yeah, to remind you what's been going on in this rather short movie already.
And then the patented antagonist hallucination in a mirror or a window, you know, he's like, yeah. He's not really there. It's a hallucination. No. Chong Li, that's there, number seven.
Seven.
Hallucination death stare, and then the love song. Frank he's on his own for love tonight.
Yeah.
He is. And then the most massive splits in cinema history.
Oh, yeah.
Let's take a second to pay these splits some respect. Because it's amazing. They really are amazing.
They really are amazing, and it is one of the best views of all time.
Yes, that view of Hong Kong is epic.
For real. Whoever actually lives in that house.
Way to go.
Awesome. And if you do the splits, kudos.
Kudos.
That's sick.
Do you think tourists go there and do the splits at that spot? Or do you think they have it like roped off so you can't get there?
If it's somehow a place that is open to the public, there's no way at least one person didn't want to go do the splits where JCVD did the splits.
How is that not a thing on social media? Yeah. How have I not seen hundreds of people attempting the splits at that location?
Yeah. $20, come in, do the splits.
Man, if you own that house, that's the way to do it.
Dude, for real.
Do you think it was a straight drop like it's presented in the camera, or do you think it's a little bit of a camera angle?
I think it's a camera angle.
If it's a straight,
I hope it's not a straight drop.
If it is a straight drop, that would be one of the most like epic scenes to come across in your life. If you were just like over there to see the enormity of Hong Kong, and then you're just like on a mountaintop basically staring at it, it'd be unbelievable.
Sign me up.
I would count this as splits count 5 and 6 because it's like a 30-second scene of him doing the splits.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Ding ding. Now it's time for the big one.
Yeah, yep.
Frank heads to the Kumite, and he sees Helmer and Rollins at the end of an alleyway.
Are you guys here for the finals?
No, we are here to stop you, Dukes.
You're not going to stop me.
We're not. He will. The police. Great acting.
Great acting.
So then he kind of just like fights his way down the alleyway. The worst part of action in the movie for me.
Yep.
It looks too slow. It looks too fake. When he like kicks that dude, he barely touches him, and he closes the doors with his foot. It's like, okay, let's move on, please. Yep. I know you're going to kick some dudes. The only good part is the end when those guys get tased via a garbage can lid deflection.
Oh, yeah.
great aim. He's got like brain powers for angles. Like it's his superpower to collect angles and distribute them correctly.
And see, he whipped out the garbage can lid, so he should have done that earlier too in that chase scene.
He really, really should. And it's very funny that Janice is there.
Yeah.
Why is she there?
Yeah.
And then she just kind of like runs up and like kind of just looking around like
she doesn't know what's going on. Oh, I didn't tell these guys where you were.
It wouldn't have made sense for Frank to be like Janice. Frank wins, and Helmer and Rollins are going to let him fight.
I'll meet you at the airport tomorrow.
All right, see you there. Frank is late to the Kumite, and it's too late, and he's gonna get disqualified. Little bribey though from our bookie friend, and things seem to be changed.
Yeah,
but Frank shows up, and so the money's taken back. Yeah. Comedy relief, I get it. Comedic relief, I get it.
For sure.
Let's fight already.
But it would have been way sweeter if that dude judo chopped the shit out of his hand when he went back in for the money.
He should have. He's more like, I don't care.
I don't care. I just want to see Frank fight.
He looks really depressed throughout the whole movie, the beard. He's like, I really don't like my job as a black dragon guy. I'm only doing this because my dad did it. I just don't want to do this.
I just don't want to do it. And I haven't been able to compete in 20 years, and I got my ass kicked.
Well, the bets are laid for the fight. Helmer and Rollins and Janice are all there in the front row because I'm sure these secret to the death fighting competitions are very welcome to reporters and police officers.
They had two more open seats in the front row.
Come on in, guys. Did they like go up to the box office and buy a couple of tickets?
Yeah, we're here to watch Frank. Oh, yeah, he's a good fighter. Good.
$23.50. $23.50. That's expensive at 1988.
Yeah, Jesus.
Come on. Okay, so first we've got a couple of fights before the really, really big coup de grace, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
We got Dukes versus Paco, and that comes up on the board. I love that board. Those things flopping up. I love that stuff. It's a great fight. Black pants, gold sash Frank. Love it. Iconic. That's what you think of when you think of this movie most of the time.
Oh, yeah.
It's still a very good outfit, but red gi. It's a red gi.
Yeah.
I didn't like the knuckle bump thing that they did at the beginning of the fight.
Stupid. Why does he fall for that?
Why didn't he just go up there and kick him in the face?
Kick him in the face.
There's no honor in Kumite. Well, yeah. I guess there is honor in Kumite, but you can kill a guy. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Kick him in the face.
But, you know, he gets the worst of that, and then the shit really hits the fan when his shirt comes off.
It really does, because that's the point. He's like, all right, that's how it's going to be, huh?
Yeah, that's like final transformation Frieza right here. Like, take that shirt off.
Besides that cheap shot, this fight had a real air of realness, and now that you know that Paco is a real Muay Thai fighter, and he's like a dude that can really kick some ass, it makes a lot of sense. Those roundhouse kicks that they were trading really looked like they were not holding a whole heck of a lot back.
Yeah.
And you could see, I didn't see it on JCVD's back, but on Paco's back, you can see that it is red all the way up and down that side where they're kicking. So who knows how many times they did it. And I'm sure that's probably part of your training as a Muay Thai fighter is to be able to take a kick like that to the ribs, because that's kind of what they do in that fight.
Right.
But still, I enjoyed that. It was real to me, and it made the movie feel really kind of cool and gritty for me. But Frank ends up ending the fight with a spinning heel kick. It seals the deal.
Yeah.
Paco is out.
He's out.
He is out. And the crowd is on Frank's side for the first time. Dukes. They love him. They love him. Chong Li does not.
Nope.
Death stare number 8. And a slight head nod from Chong Li, almost like he respects him. Weird choice for Chong Li to do that. He's like a guy that hates everybody, but now he's like, I respect you. I'm gonna kill you, but I respect you.
Right.
Weird choice. Frank sees Janice, Helmer, and Rollins. Frank still has a chance to win back that girl. He's so excited for it. As long as he wins, that is, and doesn't die.
Yeah.
Chong Li versus Chan Pi Meng. Chan Pi Meng is a dead man. Very brutal. The Black Dragon guys turn their backs. I thought it was along with the crowd, but it's not, so my brain must have just kind of put that in there. It kind of would make sense that the crowd would all stand up and turn their backs, but they did not do that. Chong Li goes a little bit off the deep end at this time. The silent screaming, the fist pumps. He looks like a psycho.
Yeah, he does.
He does look like a psycho.
You are next.
And it's kind of interesting. It's a very obvious dub at that point.
Obviously.
Why not just let the man talk?
Yeah.
I can't think of a movie where he's not dubbed.
Right.
Or has no lines.
Yeah.
Like, is he, like, I can't, Arnold Schwarzenegger stopped being dubbed at one point.
Right.
I believe Bolo Young, we can hear his voice. So maybe the silent screaming was all cut out because it was, you can kind of hear it in that scene that it was kind of high pitched.
Yeah, yeah.
So it might have been a little off-putting, but rip the Band-Aid off.
Right.
Have it the first time, the rest of the movie, it's normal. It makes
exactly.
It makes sense with his fervor and weirdness and like craziness to have that weird high-pitched scream that he was doing.
Yeah, the only reason it is weird is because he's been silent the whole damn
right.
movie to
right.
this point. So if he wasn't, it wouldn't be so damn weird.
Just let the man scream next time, please. Frank is next. Chong Li versus Frank Dukes. Love the flip-up from the big board, like I said before, and this time we get to see it from behind, get to see the yep. inner workings, which is cool, because that means there's dudes back there for every one of those flip-ups
yeah.
that are like, hey, I'm going to be in a movie. I'm going to be in a movie. yeah. Well, you were in one shot, buddy.
Right.
But still, very cool. Love it. Dramatic. It's time for that final match. Prepare the platform for the final match. Why is it angled like that?
I don't know.
I mean, Frank does fight like that in his flashback at the end of it. The mat is set up like that.
True.
So it's
something they meant to explain and didn't. I don't know.
The only thing I can really think of is maybe it makes ring outs a little bit more difficult.
Sure.
It forces the fighters together into the center of the ring. There's less places to go, kind of.
Right.
I don't know.
And it sets you up for the Bloodsport kick. That's
yes, it
on
does.
The cover of the movie.
Yes, so. It does. It really, really does. So this is it. Frank can make history today. Chong Li, he's going to get his little salt tablets because he's going to cheat.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just going to make it a surprise, maybe.
Yeah.
Make it a surprise.
Seriously.
I don't need to see the foreshadowing of salt tablets. Just make it a surprise.
For real.
Just make it a surprise. And the final outfits, black shorts versus red shorts. May the best shorts win. With those pecs a-popping, Chong Li has a final message for Frank.
You break my record. Now I break you like I break your friend.
Ooh.
And what is up with the weird clearing the nostrils for Chong Li the whole movie?
So that is something that Bolo Young does in movies.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure, because when he was doing it, I'm like, that's weird that he keeps doing it. I think he does it in other movies. I think that's what it is.
That's supposed to be, like, intimidating.
I guess. Yeah. I'm stepping on boogers. Thanks, man.
I'm looking for, like, the DBZ overabundance of neck cracks, whichever way he goes, cracking. But he just keeps clearing them nostrils.
Like, gross.
Oh, okay.
The worst is when you have to do that. Like, you actually have to do the old farmer blow or the snot rocket.
Yeah.
And it only comes, like, 3/4 of the way out. And
yeah.
You are already without a Kleenex. This is why you're doing it.
Exactly.
So do you sacrifice the sleeve? Do you sacrifice the collar? Or do you sacrifice, like, a piece of hard paper you have in your pocket? What's your choice?
If I have hard paper in my pocket, that's what I'm going for. Otherwise, I'd probably flip up the bottom of my shirt.
Good call.
And go for it.
Good call.
Not the collar. I don't want that
no.
shit tucked into my chest.
No.
I like that.
No.
And, you know, maybe the sleeve.
If I was wearing long sleeves, I think I would go sleeve. You kind of pull it up and around, you know, so you kind of do the backside.
Tuck it around the elbow.
Kind of tuck it around the elbow a little bit. Or if you do have a piece of paper, any kind of piece of paper.
Any kind.
You just crumple that bitch up a couple of times.
Yeah.
And then it's a little softer.
Yeah.
Just a little softer. And you wipe it down. At least you don't have a mustache.
Those are IOUs, sir. That's as good as money, sir. $275,000. Well, I'm going to need that.
I do have to say, mustaches make it a little bit more interesting anytime you try to do that anyway. So, no mustaches are recommended for the farmer's blow. So, like most other matches, Frank opens it up with a kick straight to face of Chong Li.
Oh, yeah.
Stunned Chong Li, throws the ref between them. That's a cheap move already, dude.
Yeah, seriously.
Already getting cheap. That's okay. Frank's going to jump off his back and kick you in the face.
Seriously.
That's a great, great shot. Love the slow-mo. It's almost a still. Like when they do it, it's almost a still frame for a second.
Right. It's kind of weird. Like, has nobody, I mean, somebody's always made it to the final match with Chong Li. You know, he's undefeated.
Right.
But for some reason, he's seen something in Frank that he's legitimately scared of, because he planned to bring something to cheat ahead of time.
Yeah.
And then he's already tossing the ref a couple moves in. Like, he is really scared of Frank.
That's a really good point. He's gone into this match already feeling defeated.
Yeah, definitely.
That's interesting. That's a really good point. I had never really put that conclusion together with him, with the cheating.
Because he's so intimidating and doesn't seem to be scared of anything.
No.
Except for Frank.
So what if it's this angle? What if he cheats every time?
That could be true, too.
But it also seems like people are kind of surprised by it.
Right.
Although, Everybody sees him. We'll get to that.
Yeah, everyone sees him do it. But yeah, I mean, he just killed someone in the last match.
True.
So, yeah. I don't know.
That's very interesting. Well, the fight continues. It's very Rocky-esque back and forth. No one knows what defense is. They're both blocking all the blows with their faces. There's no hit my eye. No. One side is chanting for Frank. The other side is chanting for Chong Li. It's like... what was the show where they would do that? Where it was the two different sides chanting, whatever, moving on. Frank hits Chong Li with another huge kick to the face. So Chong Li, he charges Frank, and Frank just jumps and flips over him, kind of landing on his butt, it seems like, almost.
Yeah.
And then that weird kick where it comes straight up from underneath him and kicks Chong Li in the face.
Cartoon kick.
It looked kind of fake. Is there a third dude that's just down there like, here's my leg. He's just throwing his leg up there or something.
Seriously.
I don't know. The angles look wrong to me, but it's still a great moment in the movie because he's really got Chong Li on the ropes now. Chong Li's like, I guess I gotta cheat? Kind of, you know? That's in a little bit, though. The tides are changing to Frank's favor. He's landing punches and kicks. Chong Li has basically no response to Frank's onslaught, so it's time to cheat at this point now. Dust to the face. Everybody saw that happen.
Everyone.
Nobody does anything about it.
Nope.
Frank is completely blinded, even though his eyes should be shut because they're irritated.
Right.
But they're even more wide open.
Yeah.
So.
Like, just close them. Just remember the lunch with your with your douchey.
So it's kind of like he's blinded or blindfolded. So after taking a few lumps and punching at nothing and getting punched a bunch more, Janice can't take the brutality. And Chong Li looks like a psychopath once again. Good job, Chong Li. Frank channels his Sadoshi and uses his training. Chong Li has no chance at this point.
Yeah.
No chance.
Before that, to even pull this emotion off, he genuinely looks like he has been overdosing on cocaine.
Yeah, he does.
He's got blood coming out of one of the nostrils. He's freaking the fuck out. And then it's like a moment later, he realizes he starts to come off of it.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, my tolerance is better than this. And then, you know, he just enters that state of Hulkamania.
Yeah.
And blocks that shit, and it's over for Chong Li.
That's a really good point. Hulkamania, that's a really good way to describe it. He wants to be a Hulkamaniac.
Oh, yeah.
Plain and simple. So Frank stops Chong Li's punch as he's kneeling on the mat. He just stops it. And then he goes straight for the gut. Frank and Chong Li, they circle each other like animals. Chong Li even throws the ref at Frank, and Frank almost punches him. He's like, no, I'm not going to punch you.
Yeah.
I know you're the referee. And then it's just windmill kick after windmill kick after windmill kick.
I love it.
Jumping splits. Splits count 7. And then like 20 spinning heel kicks to finish the job.
Yeah.
Way to go, Frank.
I mean, I don't care how scared Chong Li is at this point or blown away by the fact that Frank is still coming at him. You miss 3 of them spin kicks before hitting the 4th one on Chong Li, and you know the nards are fair game. There's no way Chong doesn't get him right in the nuts. Right in the dukes, you know?
Right in the dukes. That's very, very true. Why wasn't there any type of retaliation?
He should have done some sort of cheap shot other than the shit to the face.
I suppose those initial kicks pushed him probably to the edge of the...
Right.
Okay, I didn't really put that together.
I didn't think about that, actually.
I always thought that it was weird. Like, are they presenting this as if these kicks are supposed to be landing?
Right, and I don't think so, but that makes way more sense. He's pushing him to the edge.
But
and
still,
then he nails him because he's got nowhere to go with that last one.
Couldn't Chong Li just have, like, put an arm up to block one of those kicks?
I would think
and
so.
And knock him down, basically, and then just jump on his face and
but clearly,
punch him?
I mean, like we said, Hulkamania.
Yeah.
There's no chance.
He was mesmerized.
I think he knows.
Chong Li was mesmerized by the swinging legs of Frank Dukes, and the Hulkamania was just too much for him to handle. Just too much for him to handle. Chong Li is now on the mat, and Frank swoops in to break his neck. No.
Say it.
My dick.
And in that moment, it looks like he's back on the cocaine.
Yes, it does. It really, really does.
He's back.
Say it. So if you've ever wondered what JCVD looks coked out, this is a good example.
This is certainly got to be a good example.
Frank gets that bandana back and is the first Western champion of the Kumite. Frank gets his katana and a standing ovation.
This is for you, Shidoshi.
The next day at the hospital, Ray is back to his old self. Frank gives Ray back his bandana.
And someone gave Ray a beer.
And someone gave Ray a beer in a hospital. Great, great.
Cool, I guess. Great. By the way, next time you fight, remember to keep your clothes on.
Okay, thanks, okay. Frank. Anywhere, anytime, any place, I'll be there.
With my double fist. Like, yeah. I was thinking that, what is he going to help him do?
I got and one fist and two fists. Yeah. I'll put them together. And one giant fist.
Even if we're in other countries and you get in a predicament where you need someone to help you fight, I will take a flight and I will be there. Because that is the only thing. Ray is going to be able to be there for. Unless he's got questions on his new Harley or he's trying to play whatever the hell karate game that was in the beginning with him. There is nothing Ray is going to help Frank with.
Nope.
I just couldn't get over that watching, thinking like, okay, this is a touchy moment. I actually love their friendship more than the Janice love story I'm supposed to buy into. But I was thinking, what in the hell is Ray going to help him with? Nothing.
Nothing whatsoever.
Double fist. I love you, my friend.
And a kiss. Just a gentle, gentle kiss. It's time for Frank to go home, but Helmer and Rollins think he's going to be a no-show again at the airport. Nope, he's already on the plane.
Hey, guys, you coming or what?
Son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch. You really are a pain in the ass.
I'm glad you're on our side, kid. And then Janice, out of nowhere again. She's in some van or
pulls
bus.
Pulls up in some, like, land-to-air transport, and he doesn't give two shits to go give her a hug or kiss or anything. Just gives her the old salute.
Two-finger salute.
She gives him the whatever, you know, the karate kumite. I understand.
Fist in the palm. Yeah.
And he gives her one, and then boom.
How did she not laugh while doing that? Because she looked ridiculous.
Seriously, she looked super ridiculous.
Roll credits. But we get a bit of a backstory. We find out it's based on the true events of the life of Frank Dukes. From 1975 to 1980, Frank fought in 329 matches and retired undefeated as the world heavyweight full contact kumite champion. He holds 4 world records. Fastest KO, 3.2 seconds. Fastest punch with a KO, 0.12 seconds. Fastest kick with a KO, 72 miles per hour.
Oh, yeah.
How did it go from time to miles per hour? For sure. Most consecutive KOs in a single tournament, 56.
56. That means there's hypothetically a minimum of 112 matchups in that one.
Jesus.
Like 112 contestants, because he fought in
half of them.
Jesus. And knocked at least all of them out. Like, or there was more than 112 contestants.
So you can tell by our it may not be all true, but this one is true. He has his own ninjutsu system called Duke's Ryu. All
right.
That is true. So you can go learn that if you'd like.
Yes, you can.
So now back to the real life Frank Dukes. Ultimately, Frank Dukes is a fraud, and he lied his way into moderate fame and into making a 1980s classic movie.
Yeah.
He lied about the kumite. He lied about his records. He also lied about his military service at one point. He actually furnished fake pictures of his supposed medals, like the Medal of Honor, the highest honor a soldier can attain in the U.S. military, later walking back his claims of the photos, saying that they were actually Halloween costumes, even though I presented them as real.
Right.
So in the article of the 1980 issue of Black Belt magazine, yes, I mentioned it before, and it was a real magazine, is what got this all started. The author John Stewart, not that John Stewart, regretted writing the story and said that he was naive for believing Dukes. Frank's story was based on false premises. The trophy that he actually had claimed to have won was bought at a trophy store near where he lived.
My God.
So, to cover my ass in this one, I'm going to say this is all allegedly.
Allegedly. But that is incredible.
So I know you liked it. I know I liked it.
Obviously.
Why did you like it?
I liked it because there's nothing not to like in this movie. This is, I don't, as much, I say you could fast forward the splits part, but I don't. I don't fast forward anything in this movie.
No,
because
never.
It's too goddamn amazing.
It is.
The movie's great. JCVD is great. His butt's great.
Yep.
The satin underwear is great. His greased up torso is great.
He does have a greasy torso.
I love it all. I seriously love it all. How about yourself?
You know, this movie is a movie that hits me with a lot of nostalgia. It's a movie that I remember watching as a kid, watching as a teen, watching as an adult, watching as a 30-year-old, just watching my whole life.
For real.
Because this is just one of those great movies that when you think of a 1980s martial arts film, Bloodsport should come to mind.
Yeah.
I think of Bloodsport. I think of Best of the Best, which is another one that's going to come.
Coming
Rumble in the Bronx is technically 80s, but it was released in the 90s in America. Those are movies that you should think of when you think of 1980s action movies, martial arts action movies. And this movie just personifies everything that a martial arts movie should be. It's a tournament. The dudes are all douches. Good triumphs over evil. There's a lady friend in it.
Yep.
There is no nudity in this one, which a lot of other ones do. So
where are the boobies?
Where are the boobies? But this is a classic. If you did not watch this movie and you listen to this podcast, you're doing it wrong.
Go do your homework.
Go do your homework. So, Trav, why don't you... Oh, wait. We're not ready for that yet.
Nah.
Let's talk about the homework assignment.
Yeah.
We're going to do a Goofy movie from 1995. It was directed by Kevin Lima, screenplay by Jim Magan, Chris Matheson, and Brian Pemmatall, story by Jim Magan, based on Goof Troop. By Robert Taylor and Michael Pereza Jr. Goofy is created by Art Babbitt and Frank Webb. Produced by Dan Rounds, starring Jason Marsden as Maximilian Max Goof. Aaron Lohr is the person that provided Max's singing voice. Bill Farmer as Goofy. Rob Paulsen as PJ. Jim Cummins as Pete. Kelly Martin as Roxanne. Pauly Shore uncredited as Bobby Zemaruski.
So weird.
How is that uncredited?
Yeah. He's so damn funny.
He doesn't have a giant part in the movie, but it just seems like Pauly Shore. I'm going to save it for the episode.
All right.
Wallace Shawn as Principal Mazer. Frank Welker as Bigfoot. Jenna Von Oy as Stacy. Jenna Von Oy, did you watch Blossom as a kid?
Uh-uh.
She's an actress in Blossom, and her character in this movie looks a lot like her character in Blossom.
Nice.
Her character in Blossom was named Six. And that Mayim Bialik was Blossom. So
what was Blossom on? Cartoon Network?
Nickelodeon? No, it was a live action show, and it was on ABC, I believe. Joey Lawrence is, whoa, that's where that came from.
Oh.
That's where that came from. Tevin Campbell, uncredited as Powerline. It was released on April 7th, 1995. It had a budget of $18 million, a box office of $37.6 million, and that is $75 million in 2024. Kind of a dismal performance for a Disney film.
That is, actually.
$75 million in 1995. I mean, $100 million movies are pretty common in 1995 at that point. So that's dismal. This movie really shined in the VHS market, and that's why many people, like the both of us, enjoy this movie, because of the millions of times we watched it on VHS. Trav, hit me with that outro.
Let's get into some emails. So, spoiler somewhat alert, we were going to originally have a guest when we did this.
Yes.
We'd give it a shot. My buddy Corey Harvey was going to be on here. He's a Bloodsport enthusiast in JCVD, so... he did email us, so we're going to go right into that. Apologies for not being able to attend, but here are my thoughts on the movie Bloodsport. What can be said about the movie Bloodsport that hasn't been said already? Is it a perfect movie? Yes. Yes, it is, and you can't tell them otherwise. Does it have plot holes the size of the moon? Absolutely, but none of those matter. You know why? Because this movie fucking rules. We agree. JCVD was the king of martial arts movies. When you throw a kickboxer in, the man has done no wrong. How many times did you get to see his butt in this movie? 20, 30, all I know is it's not enough. Dude is straight chiseled. The rules of kumite are essentially the rules of Fight Club. Don't talk about kumite except with everyone you know, including reporters that you sleep with. Bolo Young might be the best villain in any movie ever. You break my record, now I break you like I break your friend, said the person who was nowhere near the set, as the ADR on this movie is unreal, including the general at the beginning of the movie, which I definitely noticed bad that one is the next time I watched it after this. I could go more into Or I could go into more, the powder in the eyes, the superhuman powers, Ray Jackson having no discernible martial arts style, how being good at martial arts also makes you good at martial arts video games, and how that makes you friends in adult life. Or the real-life Frank Dukes, which could have an entire episode all about him, but these are topics for another time. I appreciate your time, and remember, fight to survive! Kumite,
kumite, kumite. So, I got to get that part, the kumite, kumite, kumite. I'm going to put it at the end of the episode.
Yeah. So thank you for that email, Harvey. Wish you could have been here. Eventually, we will be set up. We'll have a guest on here.
Definitely. Definitely.
Eventually. So, yeah, the next email here is from Man Bear Pig. So he decided his breakdown request for a drama thriller comedy choice is Fargo. He says he hasn't seen it in a while, but it's one of those movies that Florida man probably hasn't seen, and I'm pretty sure every northern Midwest 90s kid has.
Yes.
Speaking of Florida man, in the year 2000, he reiterates in here, we went to Orlando on a family trip. It got down to the 30s one day, and the weather service sounded the alarms on dangerously low temperatures, and everyone should be afraid. We, on the other hand, went swimming in the outdoor pool. They don't make them hardy in the South, I guess. Prove me wrong, Florida man. He says, also on that trip, I was on the hotel balcony that night. I'm 14 at the time, and three other troubled teens came up and tried to mug me. Luckily, an adult walked up on the balcony, and them troubled teens ran off. My question for you is, have you ever been on a vacation and some crazy shit went down? As Minnesotans, what silly, preposterous things have you encountered in the States? And then, were you a Letterman, Leno, or Conan fan? I'm just going to say, I never really went anywhere cool. I know that sounds crazy, but my dad didn't take me on any vacations, so I didn't have any weird, like, getting to flex my Minnesota nativeness on anybody down in Florida or California or anything, but... my dad had Leno on the most when nice. I was growing up, so definitely Leno for me.
So for me, it was Letterman and Conan, and that's what he was doing was from Conan. It was the year 2000 bit.
Oh, okay.
In the year 2000, in the year 2000. It's a great bit that they even did after the year 2000. It was a great bit.
Nice.
So I was definitely a Letterman and Conan guy. I do have one. I don't know if it's funny. It's a story.
It's a story.
So in 1994, my sister broke her femur that summer. So she had to spend basically the whole summer inside because that was back when they would put you in a cast from like your armpits down to your legs. Yeah. And she had to sit on a futon for the better part of a summer. So our whole summer was basically ruined. So that Christmas, my parents took us on a carnival cruise in the Gulf of Mexico to kind of like get our summer back a little bit. It was like 14 days on a cruise ship. It was a long time on a cruise ship as a 10-year-old, I tell you what. But there was two or three times, I don't know how many times it was, I don't remember, where my parents would go have the captain's dinner, which was like adults only. The captain would be at the dinner of the ship. The captain of the ship would be at the dinner. And it was like a dress-up, ritzy affair type of thing. So my sister and I had to go with like all the kids on the ship that we got split up into these groups by age. Luckily, my sister and I got to stay together because she was going to get put in a different group. And I was like, that's my sister. And they're like, oh. I'm like, she's going to come with me. And they're like, okay. So that happened with that. But then we were at like the nightclub that was on the ship.
Yeah.
And they start playing music and they're like, okay, we're having a dance competition. So the song Jump by House of Pain came on.
I did my best
jumping ever and I won the dance competition.
No way.
Not kidding you. All I did was jump. I think I won because nobody else was dancing.
Nice.
I don't know how my 10-year-old self was like, you're never going to see any of these people again. Right. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Just do it. And I did it. And you know what my prize was? One of those broke-ass beach paddleball things.
Oh,
I was like, this is what I get? And we had to go like to some special room in the ship, and I was almost like, forget it. I don't even care. I didn't know what the prize was going to be. And my mom's like, what if it's something cool? So we went, and it wasn't something cool. And so I was like, oh, great. But whenever I do find myself traveling, I didn't travel a lot as a kid either. We did road trips in the Midwest. Like, we went to North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
We didn't travel a whole lot. There was a couple of times, like I said, we went on that cruise. And then when I was a little bit older, we went to, like, Toronto and stuff like that. But that was hockey-related, so it wasn't, like, a vacation. I do recall when we would go on vacations that it always seems like you run into somebody else from Minnesota. And as soon as you do, they're like, "You're from Minnesota? I'm from Minnesota." And then you're, like, the best of buds for like, the afternoon.
For sure.
But, yeah, that, I mean, that's my my extent of my
I'd say, stuff. I mean, mine were all in the Midwest, too, like Kansas City, Cedar Point, Ohio, the Dells a few times and that. So I'd say the only close thing I'd have is jerseys were the thing when we were kids.
Yes.
So if you're wearing a Minnesota jersey and someone outside of Minnesota has a KG jersey or a Moss jersey or something, that hits you in the feels. Like, yep, this is my dude right here. Like, yep. That's the closest thing I have.
And then you always find out that they might be local, and you're like, why are you a Minnesota sports fan? I live there.
Definitely. Yeah, but so my next one is just my question for Drew. So if this was made into a video game, Bloodsport, not Mortal Kombat, which character would you be using?
I might choose Paco for fun, because I like his fighting style.
For sure.
That would be like when you start getting bored with playing with Frank or with Chong Li.
Right. And I'm probably going Double Fist Ray Jackson.
Really? You're going to go Ray Jackson?
I think that'd be fun as hell.
It would be like choosing the guy that was the drunken fighter in Mortal Kombat. Like, you got to learn how to use him, but if you do, unstoppable.
Right,
unstoppable.
For sure, dude.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
But yeah, thanks for emailing us some awesome emails this week. So if you haven't emailed us recently, I challenge you to email us at podcast@overduehomework.com. Make sure you are following us on Instagram and Facebook for updates and assignments at Overdue Homework Podcast. And as always, don't forget to tune in to the next exciting episode of the Overdue Homework Podcast.